Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason. And today, our guest is coming to us all the way from the good old city of San Antonio. He is a repeat offender of the podcast. If you have listened to the panel, the second series of episodes that are dropping now, it's May, he was a guest, and he will hopefully be part of the panel going forward. We have the Milkman, Kyle. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Before we get into anything and everything, I have to have the story of how you got your trail name, Milkman.
Well, I was hiking in the mountains with my buddy Joe, or as we call him, Pine Frog. And we were camping at one of the campgrounds, whatever, and for some reason, at the time, I liked packing milk and cereal out. I dropped the milk carton or whatever, I guess, one time in the night, whenever, when I was drinking it, and I was just picking up my trash, and I thought it was empty. I went to go pick it up, squeezed it, you know, just to compact it, whatever, and it just shot all over my face. So whatever milk was remaining in definitely wasn't empty. So Joe just kind of made like a snark remark. He's like, that's your name right there, Milkman. And I don't know. It just kind of stuck. And
yeah.
And it's like it stuck with me on the long trails as well, because I would drink milk when I went into town. So,
okay. Yeah. And it's neat how, well, to me, to listen to the stories of how, especially hikers like you that have done the long trails, how they come upon their trail names and the stories behind them. So thanks for sharing that.
No problem.
So as we kind of get started, if you can just kind of give us a high-level overview of some of the things that you've done in the hiking and backpacking community. So maybe like just kind of start out with that, just give an introduction of almost like a little resume, if you will.
So my first, I guess, for normal people, I guess, my first long trail was the Lone Star Trail. After that, I did CDT, or the Continental Divide Trail, and then I think that's when I did the Guadalupe Ridge Trail with Joe. Then I did the Centennial Trail with Joe and Todd, and then what are trails? Oh yeah, Appalachian Trail, and then I think that's it. And then, I guess it's considered a loop trail, but I've done the Eagle Rock Loop Trail in Arkansas. And obviously I'd like to do the PCT, you know, that'd be kind of nice to not be a loser, you know.
Yeah.
First year a winner, second year a loser, third year a winner again. So I got to do the last one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the amount of time and probably blood, sweat, and tears that you've invested into the long trails of the United States, you can't stop it too.
No, yeah. Yeah, and it's like it becomes an addiction. It's like it's something I still think about to this day on the Lone Star Trail. It's like I remember that last push to get to my car, and it's like getting to my car. It's like my legs were like spaghetti, and just getting inside, trying to drive standard all the way back to San Antonio. And I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. It's like, I'm never doing this ever again. I guess your body just gets used to the punishment and the challenge or something like that. And I still remember telling my sister, I was like, yeah, I'm never going to do this ever again. It's like that cured my want to ever do a long trail. And I don't know why. It's like, I went straight to the CDT after that. It's just like, I guess I wanted to give me the biggest punishment you can give me.
So not to get into too much detail, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but you know, kind of like what you just said, I had a question pop in my mind. How hard is it to mentally recover from a long trail? Meaning that you've been on the trail for 5-6 months. Your way of life has totally changed. You start to get accustomed to that change, and then now you're back into society, job, and all that. How do you handle it, or what is the feeling like when you know shortly after you get back into society?
So the CDT and the ATF, completely different experiences with that. The CDT, it's like, that was terrible. I never knew what post-trail depression was before, and it's like, I didn't think it was like an actual thing until I started looking it up, like when I came back from the CDT, and it shows a lot of people get it. You know, it's like, I still remember that moment when I was in, what is the name? It was good. It was in East Glacier. There we go. That was the name of the town. That's the last town that you stay in or whatever when you're at the end of the CDT. I remember coming back. I just remember like it being normal. It's like, okay, I'm going to go to sleep. And like, well, really, I'd already finished the trail. So we'd come back and now we're just going to, you know, collect ourselves and get ready to go home. And so it's like we came back, slept inside the hotel, and then we woke up, went and ate breakfast like normal, like what we usually do, like when we're in town. And then that was kind of when reality hit me in the face, where I was actually having to say bye to these people I've been hiking around with, you know, a good chunk of the trail. You know, it's like, these are my buddies, you know, like this is like my family. I just remember coming home and it's like, I've never been depressed a day in my life. And it's like, I guess that was the reality of it hitting me in the face. It's just like, this is different. It's like I trained myself to do something different for 5 or 6 months, and now it's like I'm forcing myself back into society. And I don't know, that was the challenge of that, is coming back and trying to retrain myself to going back to like waking up at the same time every single morning, doing the same thing over and over. And I guess I adapted fairly well compared to most. It took me about another 6 months just to readapt back to just making it normal. It's like, it's one of those mind changing things where it's like, this can't be life, you know, running, you're the hamster on the hamster wheel, just running all the time, just trying to stick with society, you know, versus where the AT, I didn't enjoy it all that much. And it's like, I was just ready for it to be over with. I just popped right back into society like nothing. It's like, I don't know if it was just two different experiences, or maybe it's because I actually fully enjoyed the CDT versus the AT. I just did it because I was going to do the Pacific Crest Trail first. I actually had a permit and everything. And then my buddy Cash said he was going to do the AT. And I was like, might as well knock the AT out. If I do the PCT, it's like, I might not ever do the AT, just because I sectioned hiked it. I sectioned hiked it from, the approach trail to mountain crossings, or, what is the gap? Anyways, mountain crossings is it's the name of the gap where they throw the shoes over the tree. I just remember telling myself I did not enjoy that hike at all. But I was like, maybe it'll be different if I do it with a through hike and have my buddy with me the entire time. And all it really did is just, we both enjoyed the suck. But yeah, I literally came home and went right back to work. Really honestly didn't bother me. You know, I remember towards the end of the trail of the AT, I thought it was going to bother me. I remember riding in the bus, the school bus that the hostel main roadhouse had. And that's what they took you and all the hikers around in to like go to town and stuff like that. And I just remember sitting in the back of the van, and I even made like videos of it. I was like, these are my hiking buddies. This is my my family right here, right now. And I was just like, man, like, I feel like post-trail depression is going to hit. And I guess it kind of hit in those moments, but I guess it didn't bother me. Like when I finally got home, almost kind of wonder if a lot of that comes from, not eating properly and you're putting your body through a lot of stress, or your hormones are just crashed into the ground, you know, like when you get off of trail. So I wonder if that's what it was. Just maybe I was better mentally prepared on the AT, and towards the end I started eating a lot better, or tried to eat a lot better. So maybe that might have offset the differences from the CDT versus the AT. Because the CDT, the bad thing about that is, like, towards the end of the trail, like when you get up in Maine, you're resupplying out of gas stations. So you're eating, you know, like Hostess stuff, you know, Twinkies, Cheez-Its, complete junk food. Versus the AT, you have more access to actual like grocery stores and stuff like that. So that could be the difference on that.
Yeah. I always thought it was interesting. You know, you hear a lot about that hiker depression after long trails. And so I could only imagine how tough that is. And it would also, like what you just brought up, it would be interesting if there's any studies out there as to, like, you know, you're not eating right, your hormones are all jacked up, versus possibilities where hikers are eating kind of like more wholesome food and then they get off trail. That's something that I definitely need to research. That's
something we've talked about on the long trails. It's like you kind of wish that somebody would do a study on it. Somebody was mentioning that there was somebody doing like short-term studies on like Appalachian trail hikers, but this is just all he said, she said stuff or whatever. But like they were tracking apparently like how many calories a day somebody was burning and stuff like that. But nobody ever tracked it long distance from like the beginning of Georgia all the way to Maine and stuff like that. And that's what would be really be interesting. I know people have independently, they've talked about like, well, they do blood work before they start the trail and they'll do blood work after they end the trail. But like nothing's ever been truly posted and scientifically proven and stuff like that. But I think everybody already knows that your body's just like done with it at the end of the trail. It's just like, you want the adventure to keep going, but at the same time, it's like you're just tired. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe. It's like when we're coming back on the CDT, because we finished at a, man, I'm drawing a blank. It's not Chief Mountain. It's Waterton. We finished at Waterton. So to finish at the Waterton Monument, you have to walk further into Glacier National Park. And then to get out, you have to walk a whole day. So you finish the trail. So it's like you finish the actual monument saying that you finished, but then you have to walk an additional day just to get out of the park. So it's not like Chief Mountain where you go up there, touch the monument, and then you're, you know, 100 yards away from the parking lot. It's like, woo, okay, now let's hitch back. And the whole walk back, it still didn't hit me. You know, it's like I thought when I touched the Waterton Monument, I was going to start crying because it was like a huge accomplishment or whatever, but it was more of like a reality of me touching it. And I'm like, oh, okay, just another day. And then walking out, it's like, I thought it was going to be more of like an accomplishment, but it was just more of like you. So I guess what I'm getting to is like on the way out, there was a guy that asked us, is like, are y'all ready to be finished with? And it's like, oh yeah, it's like, we want the adventure to keep going, but like, we're done with this. You know, it's like, we're happy to be done with the trail. Like, let's go explore more in the future, but like, let's be done with this particular adventure.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
So kind of just stepping back, what got you into hiking? What's inspired you to start hiking, backpacking?
So I've actually thought about that a lot. And I guess I've been asked that frequently enough to where I guess I based it off of COVID. I've always loved going to the state parks and stuff like that. My grandparents and my dad and I would go out camping like in Boy Scouts, and like my grandparents, they take us out camping or glamping or whatever in the RVs and stuff like that. And I've always loved the outdoors. Like even my grandma told me that I should be like a ranger or something like that, just because how much I like being outdoors. And then growing up on a ranch as well, I don't know. It's like, I guess I've been blessed in that sense of being part of the outdoors. But during COVID, like it shut down all the state parks, like to where you had to, you know, plan, you know, like a week or two ahead, like when you want to go to the park. And I've never been that type of person. I'm not a planner at all. And I didn't like where I was being forced out of my comfort zone to like, okay, well, I need to predict what I'm going to do next week or 2 weeks and go to the park. So I started looking up public land here in Texas. I know there's not a whole lot of it because what is it, like 90-something percent of Texas is privately owned. And I did research and I found the Davy Crockett National Forest up above Houston. And that's when I started looking at like all the trails that go through there. And then all of a sudden I came across the Lone Star Trail. I was like, okay. I was like, let's start doing some research on this. And I was like, wow, it's 100 miles of like end to end, you know, like, I guess I started digging into backpacking. I've never done backpacking before. Texas isn't known for backpacking necessarily. I don't know. It's like, I just started doing a bunch of YouTube research or whatever, and it just caught my interest and I grabbed all the gear I thought that would work best for me. Like, I know my first pack with was the Gossamer gear, Mariposa 60. And then, trying to remember all, oh, and I even went big on that. The tent that I bought was a Z-Pax Altiplex. So it's like, I skipped the Big Agnes or whatever. And it's like, I went straight to the Z-Pax. And, anyways, it's like, I took a whack at it. I didn't even do a practice run or anything like that. It's like I walked all the way through and I think I made it in 3.5 or 4 days. And like I said at the beginning, it's like, I thought I was like, yep, I'm never doing this again. You know, it's like, I almost thought I was going to be like the people on the Appalachian Trail where they just dump everything on the trail, pack, tent, everything. And they're just like, nope. And then walk back out to the road and hitch back, you know, if like just leave my gear on the trail. And I don't know, like it turned into an addiction. I still wonder to this day what truly drives me to go back.
So you would say that, I guess your first, or would it be your first hiking backpacking experience would be the Lone Star hiking trail?
Yeah, that was my first experience of actually backpacking and like walking out to a certain spot, camping and keep on going. I guess, yeah, my backpacking experience, like that's Well, I was about to say, I was like, that might be my actually only backpacking experience. Cause I try to tell people I don't know how to backpack. I know how to through hike. So it's like when I've done like little, like one class here in San Antonio, like where I was teaching some local hikers, I try to get everybody's perspective. I was like, I know majority of y'all are probably going to backpack. Y'all aren't going to do what I'm doing. So it's like, I'm going to pack everything as minimalist as possible for me, because that's how I'm used to packing my stuff, is going light as possible and making sure everything has a multi-use, versus where other people, like the common talk of like other people will take chairs out, they'll take coffee cups out, you know, stuff like that, versus where I'm bare bones, you know, like I guess my comfort item some people might consider is like me having a full-size sleeping pad, and it's a regular sleeping pad, it's not an ultralight sleeping pad and stuff like that. So that's the difference on that for me. Like, I'm trying to think, like, probably the Lone Star Trail and probably the Guadalupe Mountains and the Centennial Trail. Those are my backpacking experiences. Other than that, I'm a through hiker. You know, it's like everything, like, even with full water and food and everything, my packs generally weigh around 30 pounds at most, like, leaving town.
So right now, you know, I think it's, you know, it's late in the season for the long trails. You know, I guess they start really wrapping up around October, November. Do you do a lot of hiking that's not, you would consider long trails? Like on the weekends, you're going out to state parks and hiking, just trying to stay in shape? Or is it, you know, you plan something and then, you know, you're waiting until the kickoff of like the next long hiking season? So kind of like in your downtime, how do you fulfill, or how do you maintain being in shape, you know, still getting out in the woods, you know, when you're not on a through hike?
So I'm not really consistent on anything like that. Like probably the closest I get to that, it's like I generally walk about 4 miles. Yeah, I would say just about every single one of my days off or whatever, I'll probably walk about 4 miles in the ditch that runs behind my house. It's part of the Greenway Trail that wraps around San Antonio. That's actually something I'm curious to actually hike around, because I think they say it's equivalent to like 100 miles or something like that of trails. So that'd be kind of cool to be the first person to consider through hiking all the way around it, even though it's for the most part paved. I'm more of an off the couch hiker. You know, I never have prepared myself before going on these long hikes. I'm not really the type of person to, like, I see like Dixie on YouTube, like she's starting to get into like lifting weights and stuff like that before doing these long hikes. And there's that hiker Quadzilla where he's into like weightlifting and stuff like that. I'm not really like that. I guess I just kind of just jump into it and I force my body to adapt to it. Staying in shape, I guess I just try to eat correctly, and my weight fluctuates. Like, I'll go on and off the carnivore diet just to, you know, drop weight. And then I guess I get bored of it and then I try something different. So like, I got off carnivore diet and then now it's like, I'm just experimenting around. It's like, all right, just reintroducing foods, just how my body reacts to certain things and stuff like that. Like I just started drinking raw milk, you know, never tried raw milk until now. And I'm like, man, this is delicious. But no, yeah, I don't do anything specially. Like, I'm even trying to think, like, I might just go, because that's the thing. It's like Texas. It's like you have to drive, at least where I'm at, you have to drive so far just to get out somewhere. Like for us, it's like, it's either the Lone Star Trail or going to the Guadalupe Mountains or going to a state park. But I've also learned too, where I'm more of a mountain person, you know. It's like, I want to climb up and see something, you know. That's something that the Appalachian Trail taught me, where if I'm going to climb all the way up that mountain, there's no view. And I'm like, well, what am I going to climb it for? I'm like, I don't care about it being the Appalachian Trail. It's just, what's the reward for getting up there? You know, I want to see a good view. You know, the CDT was like that all day long. You walk up a hill or a mountain, it's like, you're going to see something because you're exposed like 99% of the time on that trail. And that's how I kind of feel in some portions of Texas. Like, yeah, I walk, you know, like I walk in the parks and stuff like that, but it's more of just like a get myself out and get myself moving versus like rewarding myself for getting up that mountain. It's just like, you don't get that here versus, you know, in the Guadalupe Mountains. Yeah, you can go up there and you hike to the top and it's always beautiful seeing everything. And it's also different. You never know what the weather's going to be doing when you walk around that corner. It's the mountain and it's the desert. You could walk up to the top of that mountain, there could be a rainstorm building up, you know, anything like that, versus just here, it's just like, eh, it's boring. East Texas, y'all get a lot more rain than we do here in San Antonio. So it's like, it's more, it's kind of like what I say. It's like here in Texas, like rain is like a mini miracle all the time. I think that's pretty cool to have that, you know, if you're just walking over there, if you're not accustomed to the rain all the time, I would kind of find it cool. But at the same time, I guess if the trail's always muddy and flooded out over there on the Lone Star Trail, it's like, eh, yeah, I'm not going to do it.
I hate it. I mean, we always crave things that we don't have. So you can have my mud and rain almost every weekend for sure.
Yeah.
So it's just, take the Lone Star Hiking Trail. You have no experience and you went out there and accomplished it. What are some of the biggest mistakes you made looking back? You know, like, you had no experience. You did, you know, you bought a backpack, think you needed this gear, whether you did or not. What are some big mistakes that you made?
I don't know. That's really tough for me to think about right now. Like, I did a lot of research before I went out there, and it's like, I just grew up, I guess, in the outdoors. So it's like, I knew a lot before I went out there, I guess, versus like your first average person just going out there and just doing it. But I guess like my biggest mistake, I would say, is like, I didn't necessarily map things out. I literally just walked until I dropped. But that's how I've always hiked, you know, like even on the long trails, I never planned, you know, like if I was camping, falling asleep and looking at the map, I never told myself I'm going to make it to this next spot tomorrow. And I guess that was kind of the mistake on the Lone Star, because there was portions where I was camping right next to the road and I'm like, yeah, I should have planned this out better. I should have stayed, you know, a little bit further back there, or stayed a little bit closer to the water resource, or, you know, something like that. You know, I didn't, yeah. plan that out to where I'm like, all right, this is a dry section of the trail. I was like, I need to like really not drink water right now. Yeah. And so like now that I'm thinking about it more, I guess another mistake, I can't remember the name of that campground. I just remember the section that there used to get water from the church. And then you do like, I don't know, like 2-3 mile road walk.
So Evergreen Baptist Church.
Yeah.
And then you hike to Trailhead 10 on that road.
Yeah. And I remember there at that specific campground, there was a bunch of Boy Scouts there. And I ain't gonna lie, I like to sleep in the nude or whatever. You know, it's like I want to air my body out. You know, it's like I've just been sweating. You got to put all the lubricant on there. You got to keep things, you know, nice and lubed up. And I didn't think about camping around other people. So it's like, and these kids were just like fascinated with my different looking tent. So they kept coming over there and shining their flashlight on top of my Dyneema tent. And obviously you can kind of see through it.
Yeah.
So like, I had to kind of like tell them like, hey, get away or whatever. So that was kind of a mistake right there. I kind of wish I would have planned to not camp next to people like that.
Yeah.
I don't need people to see me in my birthday suit. You know, it's like, you got to pay me for that.
Yep, absolutely. You know, when I did the Lone Star Hiking Trail, and you know, you're talking about lubed up. Well, I had no idea that chafing was real.
Oh yeah. That's terrible, man.
Man, about mile 70, I was like, I don't know that I'm going to finish this. It hurts so bad. And I was with three other guys that, you know, had no experience backpacking or really hiking. One of the guys had some chapstick. And I said, can you break me off some of that? Golly, that was the biggest mistake. And I don't know how I would have learned from it because, you know, you hear about it, but until you experience it, you don't realize how devastating it is. But yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I had it bad enough on the Appalachian Trail because everything's just constantly wet there. I actually ended up using the same underwear that I used on the CET on the AT because it just worked. It's that Exo Officio underwear, and it worked all the way up until Vermont. And I don't know if it was just the difference in the weather or the material finally wore out or whatever. And luckily there was a Trail Angel guy there named Plans Too Much. He was able to drive me into town and I was able to get new underwear and that finally fixed it. But some of those people, I don't know how they pushed through it. Like my buddy Low Branch on the CDT in New Mexico. Yeah, it was the beginning of New Mexico. So it was from the border to Lordsburg. He was chafing so much that he was bleeding. And I can only imagine. And I can only imagine how that feels. It's like, I'm a little baby. It's like, I get that little bit of roughness right there. I'm like, and I start walking like a monkey, you know, it's like, I can't do it.
The worst thing is like mentally, you know, I'm fixing to take a step. And you're just preparing yourself for that sting. Yeah. Oh man, it sucks.
Yeah. I don't know how people can, I can put up with blister pain, you know, I mean, it still sucks, but I don't know. I guess it's one of those things, just one foot in front of the other and you just know how to numb out the pain mentally. But that chafing, I don't know. I can't do it. I don't know.
You could tell me right now, Jason, you could break your leg again or experience chafing. Like, pick your poison lightning round, and I'm picking breaking my leg again. If you look back at everything you've done so far, have you or do you have any mentors or role models that have kind of directed you in this path?
Not directly on through hiking, I guess. I guess something that kind of inspires me to explore is, I guess, like my ancestor, Casper Soltenfuss. He was like one of the first of my family members to come over from Germany to here. And just knowing all the history that happened with him, where he ended up learning three languages at the end of his life. He was a Union soldier here in the South, and he was part of a group called the Freethinkers. And long story short, he ended up seeing his whole platoon getting slaughtered in the distance by Confederates, and the Confederates chased them all the way into Mexico. that's where the history kind of gets blurred, because they say he came back as a Texas Ranger, but we've contacted the Texas Rangers and there's no record of him. But like just stuff like that, like just knowing how much he explored, he went from one country to another, a foreign land, and just lived off of it. I don't know. I guess that's what kind of inspires me to just go live life. Don't be stuck in one spot. You know, like I thought when I was going to get to like Montana walking through there, I thought I was going to fall in love with Montana. I'm like, I'm going to live here. But even walking through Montana, I was just like, Texas is my home. It's like, I like Texas. It's like, maybe people that aren't from here don't understand it, but like, that, I don't know. It's like, I will always call Texas home. I'll always come back. Nah, to get back to the question though, I don't have any direct people, because I'm the first person in my whole family to ever do what I'm doing. So I'm trying to think, like, I don't know, maybe it's just like, it's the camping, or maybe just me growing up on a ranch and just walking around and just being curious of my surroundings and finding new stuff. And then I guess going on adventures of just driving around and trying to find something new, you know, just even seeing the terrain change in Texas. I like that, you know, just driving from San Antonio to the Guadalupe Mountains. It goes from, you know, flat desert looking or whatever kind of here in San Antonio, to where then you drive through the hill country, and then all of a sudden it kind of flattens out a little bit. And then all of a sudden the mountains get bigger way in the distance and the trees get shorter, you know, just little changes. I think that's what always catches my eye. And it's like, that's something that kind of shocked me, especially on the CDT. It's like all the changes that you walk through, and it's like, it's a slow change. You know, you start out in the flat desert to where you see the mountains way in the distance, but it's just flat desert. And then you end up getting into the high desert where you start seeing bigger cactuses, bigger trees and stuff like that. And that's to add to that too. When you're in the beginning of the CDT, there's literally marks of where the trees are at for shade. So it's like, you can probably count on one hand how many trees are actually out there that are big enough for you to sit underneath. And then all of a sudden it gets to like where there's a lot of trees in the desert. And then you get into where it looks like Colorado, so northern New Mexico. So that's what was really awesome about walking through all those changes versus where the AT, maybe just because I was just zoned in and not paying attention to stuff, just trying to not focus on, I guess, it being boring, I guess. The trees changed apparently, where in Georgia, apparently the trees have branches where you can actually do an actual legit bear hang, versus you go up north, by the time that happens, there's no through hikers, I guess, hanging their food. But it's almost impossible to hang your food because the trees just go straight up and they don't have any branches, you know, sticking out. So there was those changes like that. I didn't notice it as much as the CDT. I think I probably went off your main question.
That's okay. If you look back, how has your hiking style evolved over the years? I know for me, it's gotten a lot lighter and a lot easier.
Yeah. I definitely got a lot lighter, and I guess I just became more minimalist, and my mindset also changed. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm more free thinking in that sense, where like there's the difference in the thru hikers, where you got the people that are purists, where they stick to the trail, whatever the map tells them to follow, that's exactly what they're going to stick to. It's like, I came here for the trail. And I guess in the very beginning of the CDT, I was like that, but I wasn't standoff about saying like, oh, well, if you're not here to hike the trail, what are you out here for and stuff like that. I wasn't like that. Those people like that on the AT. I guess my mind's changed now to where like what we were talking about, like quotations or something like that, or sayings that I like. And it's like, I'm here for the journey, not the destination. I ended up using the AT corridor for my adventure versus just sticking to the trail. And I feel like you have a lot more fun when you're flexible. You know, like some of the funnest stuff was like stuff that I didn't expect. Like, it's like we randomly
surviving the cult.
Yeah. Surviving the cult. That was just really random. Or just like at the last minute, we went to the movie theater there in something New York. There's that movie theater, that drive-in movie theater that you can camp in the back. I heard another guy that we were hiking with mention it. And I'm like, man, I want to do that. Yeah, it wasn't even, I don't know, not even an hour. And yeah, we were over there hitching to go into town to go to the movie theater. So just stuff like that. You know, it's like, I feel like that's what's changed the most about me is just the flexibility. But I guess that's something you learn on the trail as well, because it's kind of like going back to like we were talking about the whole plan B. You know, you always kind of do have to have a plan B, but I think your plan B mostly comes from your brain being flexible. You know, don't go into shock if something changes, you know, like,
yeah,
you could plan to try and put in a 30-mile day, but then if it starts raining, it's really going to slow you down. It's like, that's going to change if you went from a 30-mile day to 15 miles or whatever. It's like, then you're stuck in the middle. Maybe you might have to be dry camping. You know, you don't know. It's just, you have to learn to adapt with nature. That's,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess that's the biggest thing I think I learned from my through hikes, even in life, is just learn to be flexible and learn to be comfortable. You know, I think so many people are so attached to their stuff in society. But then when you're out there and you're forced to live out of a backpack for 5 to 6 months, it shows your adaptability where you can still be happy living out of a backpack. And it just showed to me, it taught me that it's all about your family and friends that are the important part. You know, it's not the items.
Yeah. So what keeps you motivated to continue to hike?
I guess it's the challenge, and I guess the want to travel and meet and make new friends. Because I think that's the difference. Like when, like, it makes me think of like the Centennial Trail. Like when I hiked it with Pine Frog and Todd, I was still having fun hiking with them, but it was completely different than doing a through hike until we got to the Mount Rushmore. All of a sudden we were being treated like rock stars. Everybody was like curious what we were doing and taking pictures of us and stuff like that. And that's what I was telling Todd and Joe. I was like, or Pine Frog. That's what I was telling them. I was like, this is kind of like what a through hike is like. It's almost kind of like you're treated like royalty walking through, and, you know, don't take it for granted and stuff like that. And some people do, you know, like they start feeling like, you know, like people doing trail magic for them is like they're entitled to it. It's like, oh, well, we earned it because we walked all the way here. And it's just like, no, like people are doing this, you know, out of the kindness of their heart and wanting to help you. That's kind of like what it's kind of shown me on that. It's like, that's what I was trying to tell them. It's like, your through hikes are like that the entire way through. It's like you're meeting people constantly, making new friends, talking to different people. That's actually probably like one of my favorite parts is like hitching with people. And, you know, it's like, I kind of look at it as like, life's like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. And it's like, that's where I got that hitch out of, I'm going to think about it right after I quit talking about it. Anyways, like, yeah, it was our first hitch trying to get out of town. And the guy pulled up in a Civic and my buddy Cash is going into the backside of the car. I'm getting in the front passenger seat and I open up the door and I see this guy's pants are down below his waist and he's not wearing any underwear. And we had been there for quite a while trying to hitch, but in my head, I was about to mentally just slam that door, be like, hell no, I ain't taking this ride. But at the same time, I was like, man, we've been here a while. I was like, and this guy's offering a ride. You know, and like that guy just kept telling stories that led to nowhere. You know, it's like just small talking with him, just trying to keep the awkwardness down. And he kept on trying to get us like veer off the road. It's like, oh, if we go down this Forest Service road, it'll be the best spring water you've ever tasted in your life. And it's like, nope, we got plenty of water. And then he just started telling stories that just went nowhere. Like I asked him, I was like, oh, so it gets pretty cold up here? It's like, oh yeah, it gets pretty cold. Like one winter I was out there chopping wood and the story just stops. You know, it's not like it was so cold that the wood just started, you know, exploding or something, you know. And
yeah,
then we get out of the car and the guy tells us to be careful in this area of Wyoming, because it made me, I can't remember word for word from what he said, but made me think of like the whole man, bear, pig thing from South Park. He's like, oh yeah, we got some grizzly bear, mountain lion hybrids up here or whatever. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And then the guy tried to shake my hand or whatever, and I didn't want to shake his hand. So I was like, oh no, man, COVID, you know, I don't want to shake your hand or whatever. And he's like, oh, okay. And so my buddy Cash didn't know what was going on with his pants being down below his waist. So he's like, oh man, you're just being an asshole or whatever. And so he shook the guy's hand and we both get out, get our packs out, whatever. The guy drives off and I just start laughing. And my buddy Cash is like, what are you laughing at? I was like, if you would have seen what I would have seen, you wouldn't have shook his hand.
Oh my God.
And, you know, just stuff like that. But yeah, I went off the topic or whatever to tell you that story.
No. I mean, that kind of goes to the motivation of why do you continue to do this? And I think it boils down to just the experience, right?
Yeah. It's all just about the experience. It's just people don't, that's why I tell people to do thru hike if you ever dream about doing one, because it's not going to happen unless you do it. And the experiences you'll remember forever. You know, I kind of feel bad in a sense that I was talking so bad about the Appalachian Trail to the people that I was originally hiking around with, that it was the AT was their first long trail. And I kept on just saying negative stuff about it. Like I remember, I can't remember their trail names, but I hiked with them a good portion through the Whites, New Hampshire and the White Mountains. And I remember that they were just ahead of us. My buddy Cash and I, we were passing them. And they start talking to us like, oh man, isn't it so great up here or whatever? And Cash and I were just like, ah, it's like a 6 out of 10. And they're like, oh yeah, we just shattered their heart. And I was like, eh, you should go to Colorado. You know, like if you think this is cool, just go to Colorado or the mountains in Wyoming and stuff like that. You know, it's like, yeah, this isn't nothing.
So I had Andrew with Trail Brush on the podcast, one of the very first podcasts I did, probably in the top five. And he talked about hiking the AT, and he said it was just like a 3 or 4 night backpacking trip between Dollar Generals.
Pretty much. I mean,
yeah, he wasn't very impressed with it. Not to say it's not a nice trail and it's something that, you know, people, if they want to do it, should do it. But yeah, I've heard that a lot actually about the AT, exactly what you're saying. So,
well, like that geared up guy that I was talking about earlier, he keeps going back to that same trail. I think he said that was his third time hiking it. And I asked him, I was like, why do you hike it so often? He's like, oh, it's easier to resupply. And it's like, if you want to get on and off trail, you can just about do that every single day. And it kind of is true. There's good chunks in there to where you cross a road every single day. So it's like worst case scenario, you go out there and you hitch, you know, you might be out there a while hitching, but I'm pretty sure as many people walk through there, you're going to find one way or another to get a hold of somebody. And then you pretty much have phone signal throughout the entire trail. You know, the CDT though, it's like, you're literally just out there. Like I remember one time, we were in the middle of Wyoming. I couldn't tell you the exact portion of it, but I sent out a GPS signal to my dad, just letting him know where I'm at. And he said, it's like, have you looked at where you're at? You're literally like in the middle of nowhere right now. And so I kind of zoomed out, and I think, yeah, like the closest town to us was like at least 30 miles away. So I was like, that's a whole day's worth of walking just to get to a town. And I was like, I liked it. I mean, it really didn't freak me out. It was just more of like, whoop, we're in the middle of nowhere. If something happens, if we get mauled by a bear, blah, 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 it's going to be a while till we get help.
So if we kind of just focus on Texas for a bit, what are your favorite hiking spots in Texas?
I mean, personally, I think I'd say Big Bend, just because Big Bend National Park is so vast. I mean,
yeah,
you have the mountains and you also have the flat portions and stuff like that. You can also go to the river. I know the Guadalupe Mountains is pretty big. Like I know a lot of people don't go visit the salt flats and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think that's what I like, is just the variety that Big Bend can offer. And I guess knowing that there's also a long trail there as well, that I guess that's not frequently as walked. I was hoping to do the Big Bend 100. I was going to try and do that with Pine Frog and Todd, but just my time coming back from the long trails didn't work out. We have no vacation accumulated. And maybe that's what get me is the more curiosity of Big Bend National Park, because I've only explored a small portion of it. Guadalupe Mountains is kind of like I've walked the top side of the mountains. I would kind of like to explore that. You and Todd are more familiar with it. There's that portion where nobody's allowed to go into the Guadalupe Mountains. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Yeah, the back behind McKittrick Canyon.
Yeah, I was about to say. I was like, is it McKittrick Canyon? Yeah, it's like, it looks like, looking down in there, it looks like if you probably kidnapped me and threw me in there, I probably wouldn't even guess I was even in Texas. Like, it just looks
absolutely,
yeah, it's mind-blowing. And then I think Todd mentioned something about it has like the biggest arch in Texas or something like that down there. There's something like that. It's just like it it's almost enticing telling you like it's illegal or not illegal, but like you're not allowed to walk down there. It's like, okay, well, what are you hiding? You know, like why are only people that work for the park able to walk down there? Is that where the bears go and hide out and they're saving that particular spot? Cause that's where the water and all the animals hang out. Or is there something down there that you don't want the public to know about? You know,
I think they say it's because of what you just said is that's, you know, that's where permanent water is and that, you know, they don't want hikers back there because that's where the animals are kind of congregating and they don't want to mess that up. But yeah, I always think when I get to the grotto is, oh man, what happens if I just keep walking or, you know, you get, or go past it to the hunter's camp and then just keep walking through there.
Yeah.
And maybe you can do it with a ranger as a guide, so then they know you're not messing with stuff, but I would definitely like to get back there.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me kind of curious if you're able to do that. Yeah, get like a guided hike. But I kind of almost wonder why if you're trying to prevent the area from being, I guess, impacted by humans or whatever, I guess it wouldn't be wise to start giving tours, I guess.
Yeah.
But I know Todd's pretty cool with them there at Guadalupe Mountains. I wonder if he might be able to get a sneak peek. But, you know, if that's the case, though, how come they don't take pictures for us? You know, at least give us videos of something back there. I know I've heard that they have, like, game cameras back there, I guess. But that's probably more primarily for the animals. But they might put that in there as just more of, like, a tactic to prevent people from going back in there, maybe.
Yeah. And I also think if you are part of a university and some kind of wildlife biology study that you can get access to go back there. But yeah, just for us normal people, I figure maybe if I keep donating enough, cause I do donate to the park, that they'll just say, you know what, we're going to let you in on the secrets. So this is an interesting question because you've hiked in many, many, many other states. How does hiking in Texas differ, you think, from other states? And I think for me, just off the top of my head, and I'm only comparing it to what I've done in like Switzerland, Germany. I know they're not states, but, you know, just different places. Washington, New Mexico, in the areas that I've been, is in Texas where I'm at, it's water carry is a huge, huge, huge issue and thinking through that, where, you know, you're in Washington state and you got a place that you can filter about every three steps. So what is your opinion on that?
I mean, there's a pro and a con to it. I still love Texas regardless. So like you mentioned, like the water carries, it doesn't matter where you go in the state, you're guaranteed to have long water carries. But what I also like about it though, is it's tough hiking. Not everybody can do it. So the trails aren't over flooded, you know, versus you go to the East Coast or the West Coast or Colorado. It's like you're guaranteed you're going to come across somebody on the trail every single time, versus where you kind of have to know a little bit what you're doing, especially if you're going into the backcountry, because it like 99% of the people that visit the Guadalupe Mountains go up to the peak and that's it. And like only like 1% of the backcountry gets visited. So that's the pro I can definitely see about that, is if you go out in the backcountry, you're going to be by yourself if you want some alone time. And that's the thing too. It's like, it shows that the beauty of Texas isn't really well known if you're not willing to explore it. It's like I just mentioned, you know, like if you kidnapped me and threw me into McKittrick Canyon or whatever, I wouldn't even guess I was even in Texas. You know, it makes me think of like something that's like in South America or something like that. So, trying to think of like some other unique aspects to it. I think it's also kind of unique, I guess, because everybody in Texas is, it's a friendly atmosphere, but also at the same time, we're not familiar with hikers. And that's where I kind of hope the whole, through hiking through Texas takes place with that trail going across Texas.
Yeah.
I think we could probably build up a pretty good reputation of like helping hikers out and stuff like that. Once the community gets established, I guess that's more of like a hope. I guess that's not really something unique to Texas, I guess.
And it's funny, like in Colorado, I always say hello, good morning, good afternoon to every hiker. And it's not because I expect them to say something back to me, but I want to look at their face. I'm keeping mental notes of backpack color, shirt color, shoes color, what's special about them, looking at their face, because, you know, how many times hikers go missing. And if you can remember some of these aspects of these people, maybe you can be part of the solution to finding them, or at least saying, hey, you know, at mile 32, you know, I crossed their path and because I remember the backpack or something. But it's funny. And I say, you know, good morning or whatever, just so they'll look up and we make eye contact. And not one time did someone in Colorado respond. They just, you know, just ignored me and kept going. And, you know, Lori, her first comment after about 30 of them just didn't say anything was, why do you say, you know, like good morning or afternoon, you know, not one of them has responded back to you. And so then I'm like, yeah, it's not about that. It's about, you know, what I just explained. So she was kind of laughing, like, you know, I guess she got tired of me. Like she was thinking that maybe my feelings would get hurt or something, because, you know, in Texas, we are nice. We, you know, we're very pleasant. You meet someone for the first time, and I don't want to say you're your best friends, but you certainly, you know, like usually you get along with the person, or, you know, you're pleasant with them, and you know, you kind of have a good time. So yeah, it was just funny that, that we did that. And I think that was the only place we were hiking in Washington. And I think people were, and I'm not saying people in Colorado are not nice. I'm just saying that one experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something you have to look at too, though. It's like, that's something I had to keep in mind as well. Like when I was doing the CDT and experiencing that, it's like, how many of those people aren't even from Colorado? Like they moved from a different state, you know, like California's moved to Colorado, you know, vice versa and stuff like that. Because, a lot of people, like in the hiking community, they might, depending on, well, whatever, not going to get into the politics of it, whatever, but like hunters, are actually pretty friendly. Like almost every single hunter I've ever come across, they want to talk to you and everything else. And they'll invite you into the camp and give you food and everything else, versus where I feel like some of these other people that aren't into the outdoors, or maybe they were, you know, they moved into the state or whatever, they're not part of the culture and stuff like that. I think that's what might create like a disconnection, I guess, because a lot of the people that I met in Colorado walking through that have been there for a long time, that like supported the CDT for the longest time, they were super friendly.
No, it could be just tourists.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's why I try to tell myself. I was like,
probably from the Upper East Coast.
Yeah, exactly. Like one of the girls I actually came across in Colorado. We're out in the middle of nowhere, and she told me she was a native. Born and raised there. She was telling me, she's like, yeah, people aren't as friendly as they used to be here and stuff like that. And that's where it kind of just opened up my eyes. You know, just. So I was like, okay, maybe it's not the state, because even when I was in Leadville, Colorado, as what we just said, that, you know, Texas is pretty friendly. And I went to a museum there in Leadville, and I was small talking with the lady there or whatever. And she took like a check mark for every state that came in. So it's like, oh, this group of family was from Texas. They're from New York and stuff like that. And so I asked her, I was like, what's the rudest state that you've come across? And she's like, Texas. And I was like, no way. And I told her, I was like, I would kind of look at it from this, you know, you have a lot of people from other states moving to Texas, and you're just going off of like the state that they're claiming, or like what their license plate says or something like that. Cause I told her, I was like, I'm from Texas. And it's like, you can tell how friendly I am. You know, it's like, I'm, you know, born and raised here. And, you know, it's like, it's weird for me to be rude to somebody, and I would have to purposely be rude to a stranger. Like you would have to do something to me, you know, and I can small talk with anybody, you know. It's like, I stuck out like a sore thumb when I was in New York standing there getting tacos or whatever. I was small talking with some of the people there, and to them, I kind of figured out their reaction to it is like, okay, what's your purpose of talking to me? And I'm like, I'm just talking to you. I have no purpose at all. You know, yeah,
what angle are you coming in at?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know if it's like a mentality of like, okay, I'm too busy, don't talk to me, or like this guy's trying to get something out of me. I don't know. But yeah, that's getting back to that. It's just kind of like, yeah, that was shocking to hear that. You know, it's like that Texas had like the worst reputation with her.
Yeah. So with all your experience, you meet someone in Texas, a Texan that wants to get into hiking and backpacking. What are some tips that you would give them? For me, my first tip is do not use a bladder. Use a smart water bottle and the Trekker Joe's water bottle sleeve holders.
Yeah, that's a good one right there. Yeah,
that would be my tip because of the water carries, the unsafetiness of the bladder. But what are some of yours?
Kind of like what I harped on earlier, just try to be as flexible as possible. You know, like specifically as a Texan, I would ask them, are you planning on hiking here in Texas or where do you plan on going? If you're staying here, I would tell them, you know, just get used to long water carries and get used to a heavy pack because it's not going to change. Versus if they're going somewhere else, you know, I would just tell them to learn to adapt to that environment and kind of just watch YouTube videos and watch people's beginning, like how their packs started out and how their packs ended when they ended the trail. You know, like what differences they made on that. I'm trying to think of some other tips that I could tell them. You know, it's like, I think
also like I don't know. I'm only saying this just because this is my feelings that when you get into hiking and backpacking, I don't know very many, especially as a beginner, I don't know very many environments where you need a hiking boot.
Yeah, I think that's like an old school mentality or whatever that you have to have boots. I remember going through, I think I was in Colorado still, and these guys were like astonished that I was using trail runners to hike instead of boots. And I told them, I was like, most people don't even wear boots doing through hikes anymore. There's been like enough studies out there. I mean, yeah, boots may last longer, but there's been enough studies out there, you know, talking about how much boots weigh and like they don't dry out very fast. But like, I think the military was the one that did the study for like every pound on your foot equals like 5 pounds on your back or something like that. So it's kind of like, well, if you're already trying to, you know, go as light as possible, why are you going to carry more weight on your feet if it's going to make that big of a difference?
And I have never felt the difference with all the miles that I've done, which clearly is not as many miles as you. A trail runner versus a boot, if my ankle's going to twist, it's going to twist.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've never have seen the benefits of it preventing your ankle from rolling or anything like that.
Yes, it still rolls.
Yeah. I mean, the only bright side I can see is like maybe in like a scenario like the Appalachian Trail where there's a little less skin exposed to like poison ivy or ticks getting in there. I mean, other than that, I don't see the pro. You know, it's like I almost feel like they make those high top shoes just for the feel good for somebody like, oh, I need something to cover my ankle. And just, I think, it's kind of making me think of my buddy Info when we were in Glacier National Park and we were sitting there around the camp. And, there was, some regular hikers that we were sharing the campground with. And the lady had mentioned where she wished that she could walk without rolling her ankles or whatever. And, she was asking Info how to, I guess, prevent that or whatever. And Info was just being nice and just saying like, oh, well, it's like, it's just something you get used to and blah, 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 this and that. And later on he had mentioned, he's like, well, it's like, really, she shouldn't be out here. It's like you build up your ankle strength by using it. So it's obviously she doesn't exercise very much. And then she tries to come out here and, you know, walking some of the toughest sections in the United States, potentially, you know, yeah, you're not going to build up very good ankle strength walking through that. And I remember she was wearing those high top shoes and it didn't help at all. She was still rolling her ankles. So it's kind of,
yes.
That's why I kind of feel like it's almost kind of like a little snuggly blanket. It's like, oh, I got more stuff covering my ankle, so I should be good, you know? And it's like, nope.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That's funny. That's absolutely funny.
Probably the only bright side is that you see them in the discounted section at REI. It's like, all right, cheaper shoes.
Yep, absolutely. And they last, right? So yep. They're going to last longer than a trail runner. So that there is that. So with all your experience, you know, hiking in the other states, how would you compare our Texas state parks and even like the national parks in terms of trail quality and even accessibility?
I would rate it pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because we don't have the wind storms, and I would say for the most part, our trees are pretty well rooted to where we don't have to worry about trees falling all the time. Maybe over there on the Lone Star Trail, because those tall pine trees that y'all might have them fall more frequently, but y'all don't have a lot of them falling. You know, like the Appalachian Trail, they have a really good community of cleaning that stuff up, but they have trees falling more frequently. Like I remember, I think I was in my tent and I heard a tree fall, and I woke up in the morning and that tree was over the trail, and I didn't remember if that trail was there before I set up or not. But just like, you know, in Texas, like, I guess it's so rare that the tree falls that you don't see it very often. But I imagine that it's probably maintained a lot faster, I guess, because we don't have giant sections of trail that nobody can get to not cut it up, I guess. I'm trying to figure out how to word that better. Like,
and I would say while you're thinking, like, you know, for us, we don't have I don't even know how to say this either. We don't have deep hiking and backpacking community as you would compare to Washington State or California, I would even say.
Yeah.
In some, you know, Colorado. And so I think we're getting there, but I think the trail support, the trail organizations is still, I would consider it kind of in its infancy stage. You know, we're getting there. We're growing, we're maturing, but I still think we lag. And like for me, I don't notice maybe there could be some faster reaction times to these types of things in other states. But I think, you know, like we've made some huge strides in our state parks with accessibility. You know, of course, the trail maintenance and stuff, where I don't see that there's a huge lag in you know, kind of what I would expect. So, yeah, it's kind of a hard question, actually, if I'm sitting here thinking about it.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of like. I'm like, there's pros and cons. And it's like you said, we're still in the infancy stage of trying to expand stuff like that here. Which is my experience walking the trail. I always feel like they're well maintained, but maybe it's because they're not frequently as traveled, maybe. But I also don't feel like we have issues of like blowdowns very often. I guess maybe because we're majority of a desert state, we don't have these crazy storms that necessarily come through and destroy stuff, like the hurricane coming through on the AT and like totally wrecking stuff, or like even we don't have wildfires all that often. It's not they never happen, but it's for some reason we just don't have them as frequently as other states. You know, like remember like one of my hitches in Colorado, they were mentioning where if it's not raining here, we're in a drought or whatever. You know, it's like it's fire season for them. If it's not raining or snowing, they're in trouble. And I was that's a different way to look at it. And I'm just like, well, what's different from Texas is like, it doesn't rain very often, but we also don't have, I guess, the same trees maybe that maybe they'd go up quicker. I don't know. But no, like you said, that kind of is a good question to like really make you think. It's like, what?
And also those places, they're just ready for an emergency because they always happen. We don't always have an emergency. So our reaction time isn't probably as on point as theirs. And what's funny, you say, and it's weird. We had a Category 3 hurricane, and there was hardly any damage on the Lone Star Hiking Trail. The last hurricane that we had, it was, I think, Beryl. It was a Category 1, and you should see the tree damage. In my neighborhood, in the Lone Star Hiking Trail, it was crazy. And then we just had like a normal windstorm. And I went out like 2 days later, Trailhead 8, the four-notch loop, And there was a section, it looked like it was a disaster, like a bomb went off. So, that's it is kind of crazy that you would think with the big hurricanes that there's always going to be a potential of more damage, and it's just not the case, and I can't explain why.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know if there was that big of a difference over there with the hurricanes.
Oh, Beryl was horrible. Like, I have probably, I don't know how many streets in my neighborhood, a lot, and probably every street had at least five houses that had a tree on top of it or through the house.
Huh.
Yeah, it was crazy. And that was just a category one. And like, I went outside during it and like, oh, this ain't that much. This ain't that bad. So kind of as we move forward, and this is crazy to me, and I don't know, I haven't given it a lot of thought, but I don't know that I've ever heard of someone saying the Continental Divide Trail was their first long trail, because I think if you just did your research, you would quickly find out that the AT is probably more suited for like new hikers and backpackers, because like we talked about before, you're never really out in the woods away from, cities and stuff. There are always, roads that you're crossing that you can get access. Every couple of days you're running into a city. And I would say the majority, and this is just me speaking, that PCT would be like that. Maybe some areas in Washington or deserty in California that you would have some sections where, you're not going to run into a city. But the Continental Divide Trail, I've always heard, and just in my research, that's the wild, man. And it's weird that, not weird, it is crazy that that was your choice and that was your first long trail. So what inspired you to hike the Continental Divide Trail, and what was your thought process to make that your first long trail?
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.